St. Andrew's this morning. We're finally coming to the end of the season of Epiphany. We don't observe Shrove Tuesday here, but St. John's certainly does, a long tradition of Shrove Tuesday pancakes. Again, I think that's not the best way one might sort of blow off steam before the austerities of Lent, but pancakes it is. And then Ash Wednesday, this Wednesday, we will have our Ash Wednesday service, as has been our tradition, at 7 o'clock in the evening. So today we come to the end of this season, and the sermon sort of feels quite simple to me. I'd really like to talk merely about the psalm today and then the gospel, and just kind of pair those two off. And see what one might, how they might illuminate each other. And so, the psalm today. Why are the nations in an uproar? Why do the peoples mutter empty threats? Why do the kings of the earth rise up in revolt and the princes plot together against the Lord and against his anointed? He whose throne is in heaven is laughing. The Lord has them in derision. Then he speaks to them in his wrath, and his rage fills them with terror. I myself have set my king upon my holy hill of Zion. Ask of me, and I will give you the nations for your inheritance, and the ends of the earth for your possession. You shall crush them with an iron rod, and shatter them like a piece of pottery. We're looking back approximately 3,000 years to a time, again, which looks, of course, they were speaking of a rather different sort of, the whole world was not exactly in their view at that time, but nonetheless, there's a lot that sounds pretty familiar about these, this writing in the psalm today that we can even apply to our own time. And especially, it is a picture of widespread conflict. Why are the nations in an uproar? And why are they fighting with each other? And again, we look at this as one of the oldest pictures of human existence. We are in conflict with each other. We're in conflict even within the groups we have, and we are in conflict within the groups and between groups. Conflict everywhere. And there's a way to read this psalm that is, I think we can gain more from it if we say, well, of course, individuals are in conflict, nations are in conflict, because we're not listening to the right thing. We are not living by principles that actually bring life and help us find ways through our own anxiety. We are listening to our baser impulses. But the thing that strikes me as so pertinent for our time today is that in this picture of conflict, there is a God who stands back, and as the word to be used for this picture of God is anthropomorphic, in the shape or likeness of a human being. God is the very anthropomorphic God who laughs at people and who says, I'm stronger than you are. You want to fight? Okay, let's fight. And the dream that rises up out of the psalm is for someone of great strength and power to make things right. And let us break those who oppose us like a piece of pottery. Let's break them. And for we know what is right. And of course, is that an old story as well? Where any human agency believes it has the answer for other people and will try to impose that answer by force. Again, this is a very, very, very old story. And what I want want us to hear in this a couple of things. One, I want us to hear how completely alive this dream is today. This dream is still moving the politics of the nations of the world, where somebody believes that somebody else is doing something wrong, and they're often right. That's not so much a dispute, and we're going to be the ones to fix it because we've got the power of God on our side, or we've got some kind of power. But the dream is for disorder and conflict to be resolved through power and strength and victory. So the psalm we have today is one of many. It's not the single voice of the Hebrew tradition, but it is a voice. And it is a voice that shaped the expectations of a people, so that by the time you get to Jesus, the people were hoping for a Messiah or a leader, a charismatic leader that would do what this psalm says. Call down power, O Jesus. You are our Messiah. Break the Romans as if they were pottery and drive them away and restore our fortunes. And this was essentially the expectation that met Jesus wherever he went. And it is in, I think, large measure the reason that Jesus kept saying, don't tell people about me. Don't tell people that I'm the Messiah. Stop doing that. And I think the reason is because every time those words got uttered, it was completely misunderstood, because what people wanted of Jesus is something like what we hear in Psalm 2. The nations fighting it out, but we've got the real power and we will break you like pottery. And the trouble is, this story, the story of Psalm 2, simply has no connection with Jesus whatsoever. It's not the God of Jesus, it's not the methodology of Jesus, it's not the spirit of Jesus. And Jesus as, well, again, we're looking ahead to the season of Lent, which is what that really means is we're walking with Jesus to Jerusalem, where he is to confront the powers of the world. And tell me how in the world you can get from the picture of Jesus on the cross saying, Father, forgive them, for they know not what they do, a picture of a God who will shatter his opponents like a piece of pottery. It's not the way of Jesus. Jesus did not shatter the Romans like pottery. He allowed himself to be crucified by them and identified in that act with all of the victims of the world's unjust brutal use of power. Jesus, the cross is both a literal historical event and it's also a metaphor for what the world does to people, what the world does to God. Because in the world of human conflict, the last thing you want anywhere is God. I mean, the real God who would counsel your heart and mind. You might want a God who's a figurehead who serves as a legitimation for your own violence. That God has been everywhere in human history. But the real God, and by that I mean the God of Jesus, you do not want that God introduced into the discussion, because then that light will shine on everyone and everyone's motives are going to be called into question. The gospel today, it's the story of the Transfiguration, where Jesus is, in a sense, the disciples had been hanging around with Jesus and they knew he was important, but there's a core of a religious experience here that they recognized the depth and presence of who Jesus actually was. So it's there's a core of a religious experience. I mean, it's on the mountaintop. But much more than that, this is Matthew's theology. It's Matthew's theology putting Jesus on the mountaintop with Moses and Elijah. Moses being the singular representative of the law, and Elijah the singular representative of the prophets. And so, basically, when you talk about the law and the prophets, you're talking about the whole shebang, everything of the Jewish tradition. And Matthew is saying, Jesus is greater than Moses. Jesus is greater than Elijah. Jesus comes not to abolish the law and the prophets, but to fulfill them. And then you get the kicker words. This is my son, the beloved. Listen to him. And precisely, we haven't and we don't. We would much, much prefer to theologize about Jesus and in the end make a Jesus who in some way serves our needs. Our needs, as we hear in Psalm 2. The old dream dies very, very hard. If only I had enough strength to deal with my enemies, I could eliminate them, I could get rid of them, I could live in peace. And Jesus simply showed us a different way. A way that has not been very well explored, but it changes one's relationship to enemies. It doesn't kill them, it doesn't eliminate them, it doesn't break them like pottery. And the plea, as it is so regularly, is why don't we listen to the gospel and hear that injunction? Listen to him. Because Jesus will show us the way out of this dark, recurring, seemingly deathless dream that we hear in Psalm 2. Psalm 2 is sort of our default human position. We know we're in conflict. We're trying to identify where that conflict comes from, and oh, it's almost always out there. And wow, don't I want some kind of power that will help me get rid of it? And Jesus really comes to us saying, the work you have to do is almost all on yourself. You have to take the log out of your own eye. You've got to do the work on yourself before you start trying to change the world. And when you start trying to change the world, oh, let's try something like, you know, if you love those who love you and kind of hang with your own group, so what? Everybody does that. Doesn't mean a thing. But if you want to start learning about who God really is, chew on the difficulty of loving your enemies. I know you don't know what that means right now, and it will not reveal itself to you until you spend a long time trying to figure out what it means. But when you do, you'll be in the territory of God, because that's who God is. God, as we heard last week, makes the rain to fall on the just and the unjust, makes the sun to shine on the evil and the good. If you want to figure out what God is like, if you want to be in conversation with the real God, you're going to have to start chewing on that imponderable mystery. How do I love my enemies? And when we do, the dream of Psalm 2 begins to fade, and we begin to realize that there is a different power in the universe that does not work like the old dream of human power. It works differently, and it works from within our hearts. And it makes real changes, not the kinds of changes that Psalm 2 inadvertently sort of advertises, which, you know, somebody's going to win in this, which means somebody's going to lose, which means somebody's going to be resentful, and somebody's going to come back the next day, and the conflict is just going to keep going. If you want to break the cycle of conflict, what did the gospel say? This is my son, the beloved. Listen to him. Amen.
Amen.